Well, thank you, Xavier. Well, that ends the panel presentations, but we're going to spend 10 minutes now on a question and answer session. So if anybody has any questions or views or opinions, now's your chance. Please raise your hand. Press the button underneath your table, Jane, and your light will come on. I will offer the first question to Jane.
Thank you, Chris. I have to apologize, but in the last session I was a little bit modest and I just raised my finger and I thought you understood that I just wanted one more question from the group and I wasn't given the floor. So this time I really raised my hand. While I have the floor, I just wanted to make one comment still about the last panel we have on science, and that is when we saw all the very good research that was presented, we saw that there was already a little bit of controversy going in the room. And I think that that was exactly what we wanted to raise, the very latest research that is going on, and that we all have to be aware of those results, good results that are coming to our attention. But what is very important to put as a perspective is that we participate and we cooperate very closely with the IPCC. And we are looking forward to the fifth assessment report right now. And in that cooperation, we sent to the IPCC a list of suggestions that we believe would be good steps in terms of scientific understanding for aviation. And will not be a surprise to anyone that in the list that we sent this time to the IPCC for their consideration, it was approved into the scope of the IPCC report that will be upcoming, was the issue of the non-CO2, the issue of contrails, etc. So we'll be looking to the IPCC to give us the necessary background on the science so that we can take the policy decisions. I just wanted to make sure that I share with the audience that piece of information before we move forward. On this panel specifically, I also have a comment rather than a question on Greg's presentation. Of course, Greg was talking about the results of CAPE, and I think that it would be something important for the audience also to note that one of the recommendations from the CAPE was, in fact, that the next assembly accept the results of CAPE as the basis for their policy decisions. So the estimates and the trends that were agreed in the CAPE process, the committee has recommended those to be the basis for the consideration of the assembly when they are talking and taking the decisions on their policies. And I think that's a nice piece of information that I would like to complement. On that, I do have not a question, but I'd like Greg after, if you could comment on the issue of communication, because I think a big part of the data understanding and is the way that you communicate that data. So if Greg, if you could address that a little bit further, that would be nice. But I'll just continue if you allow me, because I have a comment also on Stevie's presentation, and that is to be, just to highlight that, again, Stevie's mentioned the 2006 IPCC guidelines for inventories, etc. We were in ICAO deeply involved in that guideline. So the guidelines in terms of how to do the inventories or to report on international or aviation emissions, including international aviation emissions. We were extremely involved as ICAO into that guidelines, and the material that's there, in fact, was developed together with us. So we're very comfortable with the guidelines that are there. And I'd like to bring to your attention some of the results of the high-level meeting that we have been talking about, this program of action on the high-level meeting. And during the high-level meeting, we did have one decision on the issue of data. And I'll call your attention, there is from the high-level meeting, there is a declaration and there are recommendations. Among the declarations, there is one that says, ICAO will regularly report CO2 emissions from international aviation to the UNFCCC as part of its contribution to assessing progress made in the implementation of actions in the sector base on information approved by these member states. So there is a call from the high-level meeting that the good information that we are now collecting and producing in ICAO be brought to the attention of other forum like the IPCC. And I think that will be important and will contribute to the level of understanding in what's going on in terms of the emissions trends for international aviation. And I thought that was interesting to bring to the attention of the group. So if you allow me, Greg can comment on the issue of communications. Thank you.
Wow. Certainly from a MODTF standpoint, the bulk of the attendance is engineers and scientists, and we often have a challenge communicating our results in a meaningful way to a broad audience. So one of the things we did this time around, which I think has been helpful, and what I presented this afternoon was probably 25% of the final results that was actually accomplished under the environmental goals work. But we had established an ad hoc group within MODTF to really deal with the communication issue. And we, on a lot of the different, whether it be graphics, displays, tables, we had a number of brainstorming sessions to try to really focus in on some of the best ways to communicate our data, whether it be on units, whether it be, you know, what type of graphics to use, what type of colors, and of course some of them faded here, but we spent a long time on the communication side, and you know, there's still more work to do, and you know, I think as we look forward to this work cycle, things will get even better in terms of the communication side, but we did put a very heavy emphasis on it as the Secretary pointed out. So I think it's a very good point.
Thank you. Anybody else on the panel like to comment? No? Right. Well, if that's all your questions, Jane, we'll move on. Thank you. Do we have any other questions from the floor? In the fourth row here, would you turn on the, press the button underneath your desk. Your light should come on, and please tell us your name and where you're from.
Yes, hello. Shoa Sani from United Nations Environment Programme. We're very proud users of the ICAO calculator, and we want to thank ICAO for this. However, part of the issue we have is with data gaps. And I was wondering if there is going to be any extrapolation functionalities with the ICAO calculator in the near future, or defaults where data may be missing.
Actually, before I answer that, do you just want to clarify the precise areas where you think those data gaps exist? I mean, I refer to aircraft types, but are you referring to other issues?
Yes, things such as class of travel, exact routing. A lot of our users don't have all this data at hand, but
I mean, some of the things you've just mentioned, I think you'll find are actually in the calculator. Certainly, the class of travel is there, and the user is actually asked to make an input as to whether they're travelling economy or premium. I mentioned that one of the areas where we possibly might make a refinement is at the moment we made our calculation on premium versus economy based on the space occupied. And we may go to looking at weights, and that would enable us to make further subdivisions between premium itself, and we could look at premium economy and business and first. So perhaps you'd get a greater range of variables if we went down that route. And that's certainly on our agenda to look at. On the exact routing, it's very difficult without actual ATM data to know the exact routing. And as far as possible, we try and supplement the great circle distance route information by having a variable that's added on to that, which typically takes account of the actual routes that are flown. Now, those variables have been derived from real-life data but in an aggregated form. So I think as closely as possible we try to get that. But with all these things, as the data becomes available in a form that we can use, we will seek to make the improvements. And that goes for the things that you've mentioned and the ones that I referred to. And I think we're very conscious that we don't have a complete database for all aircraft type runs. And I think that's really where our priority lies in the short term, in terms of making it even more accurate than it is today. But yes, it's an ongoing exercise. And ACTS doesn't have a finite life. You know, it's there to continually revise and review as the data becomes available.
Any last questions?
David Singh, University of Toronto. My question is for Greg. Greg, if I understood your data correctly, your best case technology scenario falls well short of 2% a year, it falls well short of carbon neutral growth, and it falls obviously well short of 50% net reduction by 2050. Can you explain a little more what your best case technology scenario is based on?
Certainly can. And there's a lot of details behind this, but the best case aircraft technology scenario, and this is just from the aircraft standpoint, I can talk a little bit about the operational side, depending on really what the scope of interest of your question was. But in terms of the technology piece, we actually used a 1.5% per year improvement for all aircraft that entered the fleet as a result of the growth and retirement portion of the fleet. So we had a baseline fleet in 2006, and as we aged the fleet, certain numbers retired, and we also took into account growth based on the FESG forecast. And for all those new aircraft coming in, a 1.5% per annum improvement in technology was assumed. That's fairly straightforward in terms of aircraft technology. The operational improvements in terms of operational technology improvements, that piece, the numbers are not as simple because they were based on ICAO region. And in the best case scenario, they range, depending on region, anywhere from about 1% to as high as 8%, I think, was the final number for a couple of the regions. And that, rather than being applied to a portion of the fleet, that was applied to the entire fleet. So the idea was the entire operating fleet would benefit from CNS ATM-like improvements. And that's really only, you know, this morning we heard about four levers. That's really only two of the levers. You know, I think it's possible to still hold out hope for carbon neutrality. But, you know, we weren't in a position when we started this effort to take into account life cycle CO2 emissions from alternative fuels, and it certainly wasn't our mandate to look at things like market-based measures. So there are a couple of levers that we did not look at in our analysis.
Thank you. Great, thank you. Question from... Well, there was one gentleman who wanted one question, so we'll allow it. Please, can you turn on your button? A short question, please.
Yes, I wonder, Philip, if you would just say a couple of words to expand on how the EU ETS will handle low-carbon fuels, biofuels, or whatever when they come online and blends.
That's... item for future work. Basically, I think what we'll need to do is evaluate the fuels as they come through as purposes. So we just need to, we need to be in a process when we're faced with a particular fuel blend of working through the exact way that should work out. So the work hasn't been done, but I don't think it will be particularly, it should, I hope it should not be particularly complex.
Thank you. I think we're going to close the session now. I've been given the nod. So I'm going to conclude by thanking Greg, Tim, Stelios, Philip, Steve and Xavier. Thank you very much for your presentations. And we're now going to break. It's going to be a fairly short break. It's now 10 to 4. We'll give you 15 minutes, but if you could please be back here by no later than 4:05, that's for the final session of the afternoon. Thank